Podtacular 345 Bulletin Update for February 7th, 2013.
Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And we are back after a week to address another Waypoint Bulletin that has come out, and it has some nice juicy stuff that I think a lot of people are going to be happy with. More good matchmaking updates, and a few other ways to possibly participate in the future of Halo 4 matchmaking, maybe?
Maybe.
So, diving right into things, the bulletin was actually released a little bit behind schedule. I think it actually came out this morning, even though it's slated to come out Wednesdays. Sometimes Jessica posts them a little late. She gets all excited and just can't stop writing sometimes. But despite that, we do have the bulletin out, and we are here to talk about it today. Some of the first things that we see in the bulletin is talking about some Spartan update stuff. Now, for those who have watched or have played through episode 8, you know things are already starting to get really, really good with Spartan Ops, and I've already seen the teaser for episode 9. I don't know if you've seen it yet, Brent, but oh my gosh, has Spartan Ops made the turn in the right direction?
Yes, I've seen it. It's pretty cool. Pretty awesome.
I'm kind of speechless with some of the stuff that's going on. I mean, we saw Halsey break into Roland through her secret code words. We've seen Prometheans board Infinity. We see Spartan Palmer finally shooting some Prometheans up. It's getting good all around.
If you enjoy rising action, here it is. Just don't get disappointed if season one ends on a cliffhanger, because that's kind of the deal. I think it's going to, you know, come to sort of a climax, you know, at episode 10. Then you're going to get a cliffhanger, because developers love doing that.
Yeah, and we already have heard from people like David Ellis, who have said they're already anticipating working on a second season of Spartan Ops, so we definitely are, we're pretty sure that a second season of Spartan Ops is in the works.
Well, in my opinion, Spartan Ops is more successful than Halo 4 multiplayer is, as far as war games. I mean, look at how many people are praising Spartan Ops as opposed to how many people are just completely... It's not that they hate war games. They're just kind of jaded, I guess. It wasn't what they expected. It wasn't up to kind of the quality standard that they had going in.
Yeah, well, this goes back to the whole discussion that we've had multiple times on this show, and there's other podcasts out there. I think just about every other podcast has discussed in one way or another how Halo 4 War Games is lacking in some kind of essential functionality that's just been in the Bungie Halo games out with 343. Just with how new they are, they didn't have time to implement them, or they didn't do them quite as well. So that's just kind of one of those things where right now I think a lot of people are looking forward to the title update that's coming out in a couple weeks, and hopefully those will bring a lot of big improvements people are looking for. And they'll probably give another jump to Halo 4 War Games. But I think one of the reasons why Spartan Ops is doing so well is 343 took time to really focus on the story of Halo 4. And that's where just they've excelled at this game.
Yeah, I mean, you get a bunch of Halo fans together and ask them to write a story. That's what they're going to work on. I mean, assuming that they got people who were narrative fans, who actually... I mean, it didn't necessarily like Halo for just the multiplayer. They were really into the canon and lore of that universe. You know, you give them the free rein to do whatever they want in that universe, and they're going to take it and run with it. And 343 really did that, so I got to praise them for that. Got to give them some kudos.
Mad props. Mad props.
Word up, yo.
Because it's fantastic.
But, I like it. First, you know, the first couple episodes, they weren't really story driven. I get that they were trying to get this Spartan Ops universe set up so that they could do the cool stuff that they're doing in these later episodes, but I was a little bit worried about Spartan Ops, you know, when it first came out. It was marginally fun, but it was kind of more of a distraction People were still trying to figure out if they liked the new war games or not. They were just basically more concerned with that at the time. And now that people have kind of moved away from war games, they still want to play Halo, and this is their other outlet to do that. So,
right. And for the most part, with the predecessor being Bungie and how Halo 3 was, it's just what 343 focused on, unfortunately, was more the story behind Halo 4, not necessarily the war game stuff. Now, the war games aspect of the game is still pretty solid. It's still a fun experience from my point of view and a lot of others. It's just there's lots of little things lacking in that experience that a lot of people are very uncomfortable with, don't like, and everyone's out there says it feels like a beta.
And those things will change over time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to improve on that stuff.
And this go ahead. You go ahead.
I mean, they can see their population numbers. I mean, they know when their population numbers are dropping at a substantial rate, then it's probably something that needs to be addressed. You know, there's some sort of underlying problem with war games that they need to go in and figure out how to make it an enjoyable experience for the majority of Halo players again.
And I think a lot of this is going to play effect into the war games for Halo 5. They're going to take a lot of the lessons they learned from the mistakes they made and make sure they put more effort into focusing on the war games experience for the next title that comes out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, assuming that they're not just completely belligerent and don't care about anything the community has to say about the experience or the critique that the community has, they're going to improve on Halo 5's war game experience. I mean, it's going to be significantly better, in my opinion, than Halo 4's was when it first came out.
Agreed.
I mean, just by virtue of them having more experience. I mean, it's a natural thing. Practice makes perfect, and you know, by then they would have had, you know, 2 years of experience with development.
Right. And we definitely have seen how 343 has reacted to the community regarding Spartan Ops. We saw a lot of people really want to see a lot more dive into the fiction and a lot more involvement with the gameplay. And there are even like direct comments about getting Palmer in more action sequences and actually seeing something. And we saw 343 kind of run with the ideas the community had, and they delivered on that experience. So it goes to suffice to say that what they're going to be able to do in Halo 4 with the multiplayer, they're going to try to do it to the best that they can and implement those fixes and updates. And then whatever they can't do, they're going to probably work extra hard to get it in there for Halo 5.
I think that you will probably see a Halo 5 beta before Halo 5 comes out. I think that that's one thing that they probably regret not doing with Halo 4. I don't know the underlying reasons as to why they chose to not have a beta for Halo 4, but I mean, they obviously had their reasons. It might have been time constraints, budget restraints, just lack of caring. I don't know. But
most of it was, from what I've heard, was time constraints.
Yeah, that's what I figured. But I think now that they've seen that if you don't kind of put out a, you know, partially perfected war games experience, you know, day and date with the release, you're going to have a backlash from the community. I think that they would have been able to find some of the problems that the community has with war games if they had had a beta and fixed it, you know, prior to Halo 4 coming out.
Right. And another thing is you have to remember this is technically 343's first game.
Yeah.
So they are going to be prone to making mistakes for the first one, which we got to give them some slack for. But then again, it is Halo. So it's just right now Halo's going through an uneasy relationship with the developers and the community, trying to figure out that balance. And I think by the time Halo 5 comes out, hello.
Oh, you there?
Yep.
Hello? Oh, sorry. The connection on my laptop went out. The Ethernet cable came out of it.
Oops.
The boot's all messed up on it.
Okay. I'll just pick back up. And I think by the time Halo 5 comes out, 343 is going to have a lot better idea of what they want with Halo, have a good idea of where the community stands on a lot of the things that they did and did not include in Halo 4, and they're going to make probably a very similar experience to what Halo 2 is and just kind of explode with new content and new gameplay experience. And I'm very, very hopeful for what Halo 5 can bring to the table for the Halo franchise.
Well, if they're going to learn anything from Halo 2, it's map structure. Because when people look back at Halo 2 and start to analyze what made that game fun, you know, what made it the kind of quintessential Halo multiplayer experience, it's the maps. I mean, everybody loves those maps. And they just flowed so well with the gameplay.
They did. There were very few maps I think people had issues with for Halo 2.
So my suggestion would be, you know, get a team of people who just really understand map flow and building a fun map. You know, I mean, that's another thing, too. The maps in Halo 2 were fun. Even the maps that had, like, gimmicks and stuff, those gimmicks really didn't take away from the gameplay that much. They made them fun. I mean, the train on terminal, if you get run over by the train, it's your own fault.
Yes.
That's just funny when it happens.
It's hilarious.
I mean, you don't get frustrated. You laugh. I mean, even if you die, it's funny.
Yeah, they need to bring those kind of interactive parts back into the multiplayer experience.
I mean, watching the Warthog, you know, try to run across the bridge and just get nailed by the train, that's funny. That's hilarious.
Yeah, exactly.
Just bring stuff back like that. You know, well, bring back the gates that you had in containment. You know, those big old gates that made the huge, you know, alarm sound when you'd open them. That was cool. And it didn't kill the map flow. It was just a tiny little thing that gave you a diversion to kind of go off and do to kind of... It was another way to play.
Well, it enhanced, you know, the gameplay, really.
Yeah. I mean, if it... That was an area on the map that you had to get to that was, you know, usually undefended. But once you hit that button, everybody knows where you're at because they can hear the sound going off. So, I mean, you have to figure out, you know, how to open the gate and then get out of there in time or actually go inside the gate. Usually you bring a Warthog with you on containment if you're going to go in.
Right. That was one of my favorite maps, containment, for Halo 2.
Yeah, it was great. Trying to think of some other little gimmicky things.
Well, there was Relic, the teleporter that you had to turn on first.
Yeah. That one wasn't as... I don't know. It was just a teleporter. Like, it was cool in a way, but...
Yeah, I'm just thinking of Switch stuff.
Yeah. Like the gate on Zanzibar.
Yeah, that's another one.
That's a big one. I wish there was, like, a button you could hit to make the elevator on Ivory Tower stop. Like, that would have been cool. Like, you had to turn the elevator on and off.
Oh, that would be interesting. Just all of a sudden you stop and you're on and it's like, okay, where the heck?
Or like it starts off in an off position and you actually have to send somebody up to like the top level to turn it on.
That would be interesting.
Waterworks had
the stalactites.
Yeah, those were interactive. I completely forgot about that. I never actually got a kill with it, but I think one time my Warthog got impaled by a stalagmite.
See, I joined the Halo game too late, and I mainly played it on the PC when it was available.
And there's other ones we're probably, you know, completely forgetting that were huge, but just cool stuff like that. You know, come up with fun things to put in your maps.
There was the rotating dish on Ascension.
Yeah. Just little stuff, you know, the stuff happening on the map that changes the map flow a little bit. You know, it doesn't have to be drastic. It doesn't have to be like a hit this switch to win, you know? I mean...
Yeah, but it's just nice to have those little extra things in the game.
Yeah. In map variety.
Mm-hmm.
Visually, like, I want to see different things in different maps.
Well, and we've seen switches work. They even have in Halo 3. They had the doors on standoff. They had the gate on high ground. So they obviously work in Halo.
Yeah. And apparently they thought that they were cool enough to work in Halo 3, you know, after Halo 2. I mean, it wasn't something that they dropped from Halo 2 in Halo 3.
Right.
Now, you didn't really see any of that in Reach, which might be because of the inclusion of armor abilities. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. But still, it doesn't mean that you can't have those kind of game flow changes in there with these switches. I think
like a switch to turn gravity on and off. Like, that'd be kind of cool.
Well, if you're in a map like Impact or something from Halo 4, yeah, that'd be really interesting.
Yeah. Like super gravity or low grav.
Mm-hmm.
Like make jetpacks useless. See somebody trying to jetpack in super grav. That'd be great.
And they just go flying out of the map. That'd be hilarious. Well, another one, an interesting one would be, is to have actual switches. A lot of forgers have been asking for something that can be turned on and turned off. That would be interesting as well.
Minecraft does it. Why can't Halo? You know?
Different kind of game, but all right. Let's get back to the bulletin here. We have the next map pack coming out soon as well, the Majestic map pack. And that's supposed to be coming out in 2 weeks. And and right alongside that is going to be the title update. I wouldn't be surprised if those came out on the same day, to be honest.
Yes. I mean, if you're going to put out a title update, you know, putting it alongside the map pack kind of just seems like a natural thing to do.
Right.
I think they might have done that with Halo Reach. I think I remember, like, updates coming alongside map packs.
Yeah, maybe that, I mean, wrong. That makes sense, so it wouldn't surprise me. Next up is the next book in the Forerunner Saga by Greg Bear is coming out on March 19th, and that is Silentium. So that's going to be an interesting read. I've read through the other two, the Cryptum and Primordium books, and they're definitely interesting reads. If you read the books before playing the Halo 4 game, I think you got a very, very in-depth experience to the Halo 4 campaign experience. But if you haven't read the books and you have played the games, go read the Greg Bear novels because it'll dive into so much detail behind the Forerunners, behind the Didact, and all that Forerunner tech stuff. It's just really, really juicy information that's going to just boggle your mind if you're not boggled already.
Now, those are the books that feature librarian erotic fan fiction, right? I guess it's not fan fiction if it's canon.
True, yeah. But I wouldn't necessarily say it's erotic. I don't remember any scenes or any storylines in there where it's getting all hot and misty or anything. But yeah, I don't think it's still PG rated reading material. Right. But that book's coming out again, like I said, March 19th. So I'm excited for it. I'm trying to read through the two Karen Travis novels before that comes out. I'm halfway through Grasslands, and then Thursday War will be up next, so I'll probably be finishing up as the book comes out or shortly after the book comes out, so I'm looking forward to that one.
Cool.
Yep.
It's always nice to get extra Halo books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just waiting for books that aren't necessarily about the Forerunners. Like, I'm just going to wait until the next series that isn't about the Forerunners comes out, and I'm going to get into that one.
Well, have you read the Karen Travis stuff then?
Well, I've been thinking about that. I'm thinking about reading those.
Well, those are the ones that bridge the gap between Halo 3 and Halo 4.
Yeah. I figure those are kind of important if you're going to learn anything about canon.
They're really good because at least the one I'm reading right now, Glasslands, addresses three different sides of the story. It addresses the Oni side and how... So this is going into spoiler territory. But the Oni side on how they're kind of driving the conflict between Covenant factions, and that's kind of why we see a split in the game. It goes from the side of after Ghosts of Onyx with Halsey, Mendez, and a few other Spartans in the Dyson Sphere, their journey through the Shield world, and then the adventures of the Sangheili, and we actually follow Jewel Umdama. So the character that you've been watching throughout Spartan Ops is actually one of the key characters in this series. So they're really good reads so far. I've gotten halfway through the book. Actually, a little more than halfway through the book. And so far, it's been really, really good information that's coming out of it and really bridges the gaps between Halo 3 and Halo 4.
Yeah, that's the kind of book that I want to read as far as a Halo book goes. But the Forerunner stuff just doesn't interest me. Like, I feel like I need to read them just so I understand, like, what's going on with that entire, you know, race. But
well, so it's the two sides of the same coin with Halo 4. It's you have this conflict between the Covenant and the humanity still going on. There's that half of the story for Halo 4, and then the other half is definitely the inclusion of the Forerunners.
To me, the entire problem of... It's not really a problem, but something that bugged me about the Halo 4 story and the Greg Bear books is that traditionally, for me in the Halo games, the Forerunners were supposed to be this extremely mysterious kind of unknown entity that you were traversing these Forerunner worlds that were built by the Forerunners. I mean, these massive superstructures that could only be built by an extremely advanced alien race. And there's this air of mystery about it. You know that they're super advanced, but you didn't really know what their society was about, except through these little kind of bits and pieces you'd get from the terminals in Halo 3. But they really didn't say anything about the Forerunners that much in Halo 1 and Halo 2 that I know of.
No, and actually a lot of people have voiced their opinions about them revealing this much information about the Forerunners. For some people, like myself, it's really, really fascinating. And you know that saying when you learn, the more you know, the more you know how much you don't know kind of thing?
Yeah.
So that's just kind of what it feels to me is like we have this revelation of the Forerunners and then reading the Greg Bear books is like, oh, this is so cool. And it's like, there's so much other stuff now that we don't know about. And then there's the flip side to that. Well, this was mysterious before and now the mystery's kind of gone. And now I'm even more lost and confused.
Well, I mean, for me, it was also like the speed at which they unveiled this, you know, kind of... Forerunner story. I mean, because all of a sudden you went from having very little information to 343 just bombarding you with it. You know, you had.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different, I think a lot of people would say issues with the delivery of the story because from the content aspect of it, it wasn't too bad. It's just some of the stuff that we got exposed to. A lot of people feel that didn't quite match up with how it was revealed to the player.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a lot of discourse between what I think people thought the Forerunners were and then what they were revealed to be, you know, in the canon. Everybody had their own kind of idea of the Forerunners playing through Halo. I mean, it was a subject of your own imagination. So, I mean, everybody probably imagined a different thing, and now they've shown what it really is, and people have this kind of disconnect. I wish they would have just been a little slower with kind of trickling down information about the Forerunners, you know, kind of spread it out across this trilogy instead of just giving it all to me right now. Well, I mean, I realize that there's more things that we don't know about the Forerunners, but we know significantly more about the Forerunners than we did prior to Halo 4.
I think they're going to reveal so much information in the next two games, though, that they had to get so much out there, and that's unfortunate for how they had to deliver the game, but I feel that with some of the stuff that we're going to see down the road, they kind of had to do that. Now, granted, what I just said there may or may not be true come when the actual games come out, but depending on how deep 343 wants to dive into this story for the game kind of determines how much information that they need to expose. So maybe what they exposed here is what they really needed to. And for some people, it's just too much. And there's another argument going around where for a Halo game, you can pretty much dive into it without knowing too much what happened in the external game fiction to know what's going on. And this is the first game that we've seen in the Halo franchise where unless you read the books, there's a lot of things that you're going to miss. And unless you're listening to a podcast like ours or the Waypoint Community Modcast or some other in-depth podcasts.
I think, in a way, and I don't know this for sure, you know, I don't have any insight into Bungie's development culture, but I think in a way they kind of resented the books. They had their own story that they wanted to tell with Halo. And I think I've said this before on the podcast, but they had their own story, and then they had the books, you know, which were beholden to the authors that wrote them. So you have, like, Eric Nyland writing one thing, and then you have, you know, the Bungie writing staff with a completely other vision, you know, a completely different vision of what Halo was. And at the same time, you couldn't completely make the books irrelevant. They had to be canon in a way, but you could tell that Bungie really didn't like it. And they showed that with the the difference between Halo Reach, the game, and Fall of Reach, the novel.
Yeah.
So, but 343 is a lot more interested in, you know, kind of tying in the external fiction, the extended universe, into this universe. Like, it's not extended universe in the sense that this is ancillary stuff that's not going to show up in the games. It's extended as in, you don't have to read it, but if you want to have a full understanding of what's going on in the games, you kind of need to read it.
Well, and I think with how well Spartan Ops has been received, that I think the trend towards that is going to increase a little bit. I would like to see 343 come out with videos that maybe sum up the books for people that haven't read them.
Yeah.
Because being able to take in information that way, like do a 20-minute video on each of the books, and I'm sure you'll get a vast majority of casual Halo players involved with the external fiction that way.
Yeah. I think the fear with that would be if you summarize the books and people aren't going to read them. But I think that would be kind of a false fear. I think if you summarize it, people might get interested in the book and decide to buy it. You know, if you give them a summary of events, as long as, I mean, that's a problem too, though. People don't like spoilers. But with the Halo universe, you know, all of this stuff's already happened. I mean, the events of Halo 4 happen after Thursday War, right? In the Karen Travis novels. So, all of the events of Halo 4 happen after the Karen Travis novels, right?
Right.
So, I mean, all that stuff of those novels, essentially, if you've played Halo 4. I mean, you don't know all of the outcomes of the individual storylines in those books, but you know how those books affected the in-game universe of Halo. I mean,
right.
Halsey's still alive because you can see Halsey on the Infinity. So, I mean, you know that there's not going to be a book in which Halsey dies. Or, you know, that Halsey was lost on Onyx. Obviously, she got back somehow. You know that, you know, that's how that book's going to pan out. I don't know that much about the Karen Travis books, but you could probably summarize those books and get people interested in them in a way that wouldn't be just too spoilery.
Well, and definitely leave a window where you have people go out and buy the books maybe 6 or 9 months, and then after that time, then release the summary.
And go ahead.
And then if more people are interested, then they go out and buy the books, because your core audience is going to go out and buy that book within the first month or two of it coming out if they're really into the story of Halo.
Yeah. I mean, if they're into the story, they're buying the books. You need to find a way to get people who are not interested in the ancillary, I mean, the extended universe Halo story. You need to find a way to get them involved somehow. Especially if you're going to go in this direction where the extended universe story is increasingly more relevant to the in-game universe story. Because eventually there's a problem where if you put too much information in the books and no information regarding that in Halo 5 or Halo 6, then people are going to play the games and have no clue what's going on. I mean, that was one complaint with Halo 4 that kind of came out of people, was they had no idea who the Didact is. Like, there's just random Forerunner character who wants to kill off humanity for whatever reason. Like, people, they have this disconnect between this, you know, benevolent race that tried to destroy the greatest threat the universe ever faced. I mean, the galaxy had ever faced, you know, with the Flood, and they built these, you know, Pyrrhic victory Halo rings, and, you know, killed themselves off to save the little bit of life that was still left in the galaxy. And now there's this Didact who turns out to be a giant dick, and he wants to kill off humanity, and all in the name of, you know, the same kind of, I mean,
preserving the mantle and everything.
Yeah, humanity is not the Flood. Okay, I mean, they even showed that there was war between the ancient humans and the Forerunners. But, I mean, they had a little bit of, you know, compassion for the humans even while they were destroying them. I mean, they finally understood that the humans were running from the Flood. They weren't a malevolent force. They were a frightened force, you know, running for their lives. But you get this disconnect between the Forerunners, what you thought they were, and now there's this, you know, huge, I mean, if you didn't read the books, you wouldn't understand why the Didact's a dickhead.
Right. Exactly. And that's one of the main issues that a lot of people have with the game. So I wouldn't see a summary thing being totally out of the realm of what 343 can do. I mean, we saw the summary videos of what happened during all the games. Those came out on Waypoint shortly after Reach came out.
Yeah.
So who says that they can't do that same kind of style for the books? And heck, maybe it's something that we could do. We could do a video series on it. Or some community out there.
They need to put out the books in a set like they did with the first three Halo books. I think that, like, you put out a set of paperbacks for, like, an extremely cheap price, people will buy them.
I think they will once all three books of both trilogies come out. I think they'll do that. Yeah.
So you get a set going. You put it out at a price that people cannot refuse. You know, you put it out on all... I assume that they're already on tablets and stuff. You can get it on Kindle.
Yeah, there are probably already ebooks.
Yeah. So, Audible, I don't know. I mean, I know that they did Fall of Reach as an audiobook. I don't know if they've done the Karen Travis books.
Yeah, I don't know about Audible.
I enjoy listening to audiobooks. I mean, that's pretty fun.
It just doesn't work for me. Because I'll drift off, and by the time I finally come to and it's like, oh, I'm listening to something, I'm
already... It depends on how... Yeah. I mean, if the dude who's talking has a really, like, a soothing voice, kind of a mellow lullaby voice while he's reading, you can really doze off. But that's why they need to get Steve Downes to do it. He'd be pretty great at reading audiobooks.
That would be interesting.
Or Stitzer. Jen Taylor?
What book would you have Stitzer read?
The Greg Bear books. I don't know why, but just the idea of Jeff Stitzer doing Forerunner voices is funny to me.
You do have a point there. Yes, I can agree to that. I can see, I guess, Jen Taylor doing the Karen Travis ones.
Yeah.
And then have Steve Downes do the first trilogy and the second trilogy, the Ghost of Onyx, Contact, Harvest, and Cole Protocol. Contact Harvest was an interesting book.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that book. I forgot that it existed.
It's basically kind of Sergeant Johnson's introduction to the whole Spartan program kind of thing.
Halo Origins, Johnson.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. We've kind of traversed away from the Spartan Ops stuff, so let's kind of get back into it. Or the bulletin stuff, sorry. So episode 8 came out this week. And the cutscene or the CGI sequence for that, it's still just kind of mind blowing how they've turned this around. But for the bulletin, they're kind of doing this a week behind schedule just so they can give people time to actually play through it. So they talk a little bit about episode 7. And one of the funny facts in here that I found really, really interesting was one of the writers for Spartan Ops, Brian Reed, the way they came up with the kind of password Halsey used on Roland to kind of get into his root processes was actually something of a kind of a butt dial text, and the autocorrect on his phone turned it to undid iridium. So that's what they ended up using for the phrase that Halsey used. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little Easter egg, you know, just kind of slide it in there for the fan.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what kind of things determine what goes into a game.
Just cool little references and things that you wouldn't expect. Little inside jokes you might not know about.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Next on the docket for the bulletin is the matchmaking playlist update. And Jessica did something very, very sneaky-like. So whenever they get someone big on, they usually do kind of their video introductions, and whenever they have one of their Vidocs, they do kind of similar thing with people. So they were setting up to do it with Bravo, and you could just tell that he's like just so happy to be working for 343. He's like the guy that's doing the video stuff. He's kind of setting up, and Bravo's just sitting there kind of doing this crying laugh thing. And I mean, our thoughts go out to you, Bravo. We're really happy and really proud of what you've accomplished. And now you're at 343. We know you're doing great things out there. So kudos to you, man. We are really, really excited to see what's going to come out from you and from the 343 community as a whole in the future. So glad to know that you're part of the team, and congrats to you.
Yes, congratulations. You've made it.
He did. But so it's a minute long video clip of him just kind of sitting there, just still can't imagine that he's made it there. And then the bulletin just said that she slipped it in without him knowing. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, well, I'm sure he's probably already tweeted about it, but, the reaction that Jessica's going to get from him when he finds out.
I just keep waiting for, like, Barry Manilow to bust in, start singing, "Looks like we made it."
You can probably do a few songs for that little bit right there. But to the War Games update. So we've actually been seeing Bravo post the War Games updates for the past two or three bulletins now. So he's been with 343 since December. It's just, this is kind of his official introduction. But to kick that off, Team Snipers is making a comeback.
It's back.
It's back. So everyone who was sad to see it go, fear no more, because it is back and it has been refined and better than ever. We have the specific game type settings. So Team Snipers is still 4v4, still 60 kills. The loadout has been trimmed down to its bare minimum, where you have a sniper rifle, no instant respawn, no death cam, no motion tracker, unlimited ammo, time limit is 12 minutes, no personal ordnance, no grenades, and no ordnance drops. I'm assuming you still have a secondary. It doesn't say here specifically. But if you have a secondary, it's probably going to be a Magnum. If you have... Well, okay, I'm sorry. It says UNSC sniper rifle only, so I'm guessing it's not going to have any secondary. So I take that back. So that's going to be your Team Snipers game type. And in addition to that, they're reintroducing Shoddy Snipers. So this is a Halo classic. This, of course, is a sniper rifle as your primary and shotgun as secondary. So you're either doing extreme long distance or extreme short distance fighting. And there's going to be grenades, and that's really the only difference, is that you have a shotgun and you have grenades. So this is... I remember a lot of fun games playing this in Halo 3 and a lot of very frustrating ones. So this is definitely kind of a, I think, a Halo classic game type of Shoddy Snipes.
In my experience, the shotgun has been almost... Well, not completely useless, but, I mean, the emphasis is on the sniper rifle. Because even the sniper rifle has close range capabilities. I mean, you get two shots off in somebody's chest, they're going to die. And it's not that hard to get a no-scope in the chest. I mean, that's assuming that they don't actually know how to, you know, no-scope. Some people get really good at that. So
right. But still, the tracking on the sniper rifle, it's a lot harder to do. So that's why they have the Shoddy Snipes. And I could see it working really well with some of the smaller maps and with a lot of the maps that have kind of the altering terrain. So I could see it kind of effective on Abandoned. Granted, you have that whole... It depends on how they do the spawning in there. That'd be a big game changer for Team Snipers. But there's some other maps. Haven's going to be one of the ones in there. And then some Forge maps is also going to be introduced into that playlist. So they have a map list, actually. So it's Haven, Abandoned, and some Forge maps. And so, in addition to Team Snipers coming back, they're introducing a new playlist, and it's called Team Objectives. I told you guys I called this probably for the last month or so, that they're going to do a Team Objective playlist, and they have come out and done it. What it's going to include is Team Regicide, Oddball, and King of the Hill. So I misjudged the Team Regicide, and instead thought it was going to be Capture the Flag, but still a good combination of objective game types to put in the overall playlist. So that means that the Oddball playlist and the Regicide playlist, or Team Regicide playlist, sorry, are combining into this Team Objective playlist, and with King of the Hill being introduced back in as one of the game types that you can choose, and then taking one of the extra spots that those other two playlists dropped out is Team Snipers. So we're essentially not losing anything in this week's matchmaking update.
But you're not gaining stockpile, so too bad.
Well, there's no stockpile game type, so that'd be a little hard to do, I think.
I was just trying to think of like a old game type that I marginally enjoyed that they just didn't include in Halo 4, and I'm like,
race
stockpile
race.
I never really enjoyed Race that much. I know some people love it, but I just never appealed to me. I want them to put it in because I know people love it. Like, give the people what they want, but...
Well, it's a lot more fun with customs. I'll just say it that way. And there, just about everybody out there wants Race back. If you go around listening to the community as a whole, the one thing that everyone wants is Race. That's kind of like the standout game type that everyone misses is Race. So if there's a way that they can bring it back in, they're going to bring it back in. I strongly believe that.
Yes. So when do you think you'll see that?
If they
do put it in.
If they put it in, I want to say we'll probably see it April, May timeframe. That would
be
my guess.
If they put it out like the month before Halo 5 comes out.
That would make no sense.
That would be funny. Then they'd just be trolling you.
Yeah, that'd be...
At that point.
That'd probably piss some people off, too. They'd probably turn some people away from playing Halo 5.
But to be fair, Halo population always jumps up in the game that comes... You know, I mean...
Yes.
Halo Reach was way more popular the month before Halo 4 came out than it was the prior 3 months.
Well, yeah, because it's anticipation. It's gearing up for the release. Of course it's going to be more popular.
Yeah.
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 My next call for a playlist kind of merge or migration would be big team objectives. So combining things like Dominion, Extraction, and possibly Capture the Flag. So that'd probably be my next call for like a merge of playlists.
Yeah.
Although I would like to see a veto option or a reroll option be done for the voting. Because it worked well in Reach. It really did. Like, you were given the three options, and then you were given the option to veto that set and then give another set. I think that having the two sets is fine, but I still think that extra kind of veto round needs to be, if possible, implemented in Halo 4 for these combined playlists.
Give people choice. You know, the more things you put into the playlist, the more opportunity it is to roll a list of game types and, you know, maps that people don't like. You know, they want to play something else. I mean, you look back at Reach, there was times when you'd get, you know, three sets that were just completely awful, and all of a sudden you'd see the none of the above map, you know, everybody starts voting that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a good way to gauge, like, what the community liked at the time, even. Like, you could definitely tell, like, the list comes up, you'll know instantly if everything was going to get vetoed.
Yeah, because there's certain game types that just don't work well with some of the maps that were chosen for it. And some
or
just,
they worked well, they just weren't fun.
Or they got overplayed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so King of the Hill is back in that team objective playlist. So if you miss King of the Hill, you don't have to miss it anymore.
Yay.
They've come out with some updates for the 2v2 playlist. They have altered the tables for the personal ordnance, so there's no more incineration cannons, rocket launchers, sniper rifles, over shields, etc. Any of the big power weapons and big game changer stuff in personal ordnance. So they've dialed that back and really balanced it out for team doubles. I actually haven't played team doubles yet. I find it a little bit more fun to play with a little bit more people than just two. I know the competitive community is really into the team doubles stuff, and that's fine. I'm not a big doubles person.
I'm a big team battle kind of guy. I've always enjoyed big team battle.
I like the 4v4, and the big team is more fun, but I think when you get to the 4v4 and the 5v5, that's really when teamwork excels and is really kind of the star of the game.
Yeah, because you have to deal with multiple people on your team that may or may not be competent enough to, you know, either they'll either help you ratchet your way up to victory, or they'll just completely pull you down and ruin your team. I mean, it's a good way to find out who has the better team if you have more people. There's more variables to deal with there.
Right, and it's almost like four is that magic number.
I mean, you get a big team battle game going. You get eight people who know each other and have played with each other, know each other's gameplay styles, have good teamwork, good communication. Then you get like eight randoms playing against them. The 8v or the team with the people who know each other is always going to win, like almost every single time. I don't remember ever going into BTB with a full team and losing very often. It must have been like a 95% win rate.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it.
The only time we lost was when we were going up against another team that, you know, was similar to us, had people knew each other.
And actually talking to each other and all that.
I mean, that's just natural. It's less of a big deal in 4v4. I mean, there's been times in 4v4 where I knew that, I mean, you would look at their gamer tags and, you know, MLG, you know, blankety blank X, triple X, whatever, and they all had the same emblem. You could tell that they were playing with each other, but I was when, you know, go in there with three randoms and we still beat them.
Yeah, well, you get some those kind of people sometimes that just work well with other people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And sometimes people that play with each other just aren't very good. I mean, just because you're playing together with people you know doesn't necessarily mean you have good communication or that everybody's competent in the game or...
Very true.
Know how to work together. That's a big deal, too. You know, if everybody's going off Rambo, you know, nobody's going to win. You can't have a team of eight Rambos and, you know, expect to be efficient.
No. Like, well, I guess Slayer would be kind of the only game type that caters to that kind of thing, but even
yeah, but that, in objective, it's completely different.
Yeah. So, moving right along for the bulletin, there's the War Games feedback section in the forums now, so they've had this open for a while, so if you have any kind of suggestions or dislikes or likes about any of the playlist stuff or any of the game types that are currently in matchmaking, you can head over to this thread and post your feedback there, and I'll include a link in the show notes. The Team Throwdown playlist, which is the big competitive playlist that they've been talking about for a while now, is actually going to come out in next week's matchmaking playlist update. So on February 18th is when that game type is going, or that playlist is going to come out. This isn't the CSR, the competitive skill ranking thing that's coming out. That's still coming out in April, but this playlist is the pretty much designated competitive playlist for Halo 4.
Are you ready to throw down, Dustin? Are you excited for this?
I'm intrigued. I wouldn't say excited, but I'm intrigued on what it's going to be like.
All BR starts. No health. No shields.
I like the DMR.
It's basically team SWAT. No radar. No AAs.
Mm-hmm.
No weapons on map. No ordnance. Mm-hmm. No grenades. No weapons even.
I think there's just grenades.
Melee only.
Okay. You're getting funny here.
I'm just coming up with.
Okay, you're getting funny here. But no, we actually talked about this a little bit before, and I'll go ahead and go through it again. But some of the early details that they've already released is that throwback is going to be 4v4. You have preset loadouts, forced respawn timers, which means there's no instant respawn. There's ordnance and resupply timers. So all of the random ordnance drops, they're not there anymore. It's going to be set weapons and on set timers. No join in progress, no split screen play, which means no bringing guests along in this playlist. Friendly fire on, which I'm not sure why that one is specified there when it's pretty much almost global across all matchmaking playlists. Max party size of 4 with a big party matching enforced, and that means that you can only bring up to 4 people into the playlist, so you can't bring a full party of 8, or you can't bring in the party of 7 and try to pick up a random. It's max party of 4, and the big party matching enforced means that if you go in with a party of 4, it's going to try to find another party of 4 as a priority instead of trying to find like 2 singles and a double. And that playlist is also going to have modified versions of Slayer, CTF, Extraction, and King of the Hill.
Yes.
So those are the details on that, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes as well, that forum post. Wow, it has 34 pages. Jeez.
I'm still waiting on Team Action Sack. Team Fiesta.
Yes.
Once again.
I actually need to talk to Jess about that, because when I was at my friend's bachelor party, it was basically a huge LAN party, and we tried some kind of wacky things. So we did 3 team capture the flag, 3 team extraction, and it was just a load of fun. a lot of the multi-team kind of stuff. I want to see them experiment with that. I want to see them experiment with multi-team game types.
I want to see the community experimenting with custom game types. I mean, if you're disinterested in the things that 343's put out as far as matchmaking goes, just start some custom games, you know? Make a game type that you enjoy and you know your friends are going to enjoy. I mean, I think we need to try to get the Halo community back into custom games. And I know that, I mean, they're still popular, but I think we need to start a new emphasis on custom games being a big deal again. Because people look back at Halo 2 in those days, you know, even though matchmaking was great and the maps were great and the default playlists, you know, game types were great, people still played custom games and they came up with all sorts of crazy creative things that we still have today. That's where zombies came from. That's where, I mean, zombies, I think, was around
Halo 2 is when it started.
I didn't know if it was around in the first Halo. Were you able to change teams back then? I think that might have been the big impediment to that.
I think you were allowed to change teams.
Because that was how you did it in Halo 2.
We didn't have the sword.
Bad thing about Halo 2 zombies was the honor system. Because sometimes, I mean, but if you didn't change, you would just get kicked, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have swords in Halo 2 either, which is kind of one of the key components of...
No, you did have swords in Halo 2.
I mean, sorry, Halo 1.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Trying to think of what you could have used. Yeah, I forget that the sword is part and parcel to that particular game type. And it wasn't around in Halo 1, you're right. So that was probably the big one. I mean, it came around in... I guess you could have zombies with shotguns, but that wouldn't work. work as well.
So there were lots of different variants of zombies that went around. It was like you could do SMGs, you could only do magnums. I mean, it was kind of a mixture of the two.
Yeah,
but the
zombies almost always had sword. I don't remember a zombies game type not having a sword for zombies. I mean,
no,
the
zombies
difference
always
was
had
between
swords.
What the humans had.
Yeah, the humans were the popular configuration for the humans was SMG and magnum for the humans, and then sword for the zombies. And you're right, it was a big honor system game too.
But going back to what I was saying, you know, I mean, we had a lot of cool things come out of Halo 2 customs. So I think that 343 needs to do something to kind of invigorate the customs community. I don't know what they would do, but just think of something, you know, anything.
Well, I think part of it is just kind of the feedback that we've gotten from the Forge communities on some of the features that just aren't quite there for some of the Forge stuff. So I've also heard some complaints about the custom game options.
Yeah, just fix that stuff, you know? I mean, that's going to reinvigorate the community.
Well, so they can't fix the custom game stuff now. The options that are there are pretty much set at this point.
Mm.
But there's definitely a lot of little Forge things that, having some afterthought, 343 really needs to make sure they fix for Halo 5.
Yeah, just more options are always better, just in general.
And I think another thing is, with how limited the hardware is for the Xbox 360, they could only just put so much in there for Halo 4, that I think with Halo 5, we're going to see a big jump in features and usability for the game. And that's one of the other reasons why I'm kind of really hoping to see what really looking forward to what they're going to put out for Halo 5, just because of the new hardware, the new capabilities that are at their fingertips.
Well, according to rumors, you won't be able to sell Halo 5 back to GameStop for $3.
Well, actually, there was an article recently. I hadn't read it. I was browsing through RSS feeds, and there was actually an article of saying why Microsoft wouldn't do that.
I don't know. I think that they would do it. I think that Microsoft likes owning kind of the key to entry for just about everything.
That kills,
you know,
LAN parties, though.
Yeah.
But do
they care?
Well, so that was so that was Sony that was rumored to do that. That wasn't Microsoft.
No, I'm saying I've read rumors that the Xbox 720 won't have physical game copies, or that they're going to severely underplay physical game copies and most of their sales digitally. That way it'll undermine the used game market. I mean, you can't sell a digital game back to Microsoft. They're not going to buy it. So it'll
I think the way to do that, the best way to do that then, is to put the game on the marketplace the day the game gets released. Or have it to where you can pre-order the game digitally through Xbox, and then when it gets released, when it actually turns 12 o'clock, it instantly starts to download on your console. That's the best way to do that. Like, keep the physical copies there, and everyone that wants to go to digital, that market is going to just naturally progress over to that side, and then GameStop is going to take the hit naturally anyways. Because right now, the on-demand game stuff, I think it waits at least a month before it comes out as being able to be downloaded. Like, the Halo 4 on-demand, I think, came out... if it hasn't come out yet, it came out in the last week or so. Or it's coming up here very, very soon.
I think... And I know that they won't do it, but the one way you would make a digital distribution system, an exclusive digital distribution system work, would be to make the games cheaper on that system than they would be physically. I mean, right now you get a physical copy of a game for $60. And, you know, part
of that...
Make
them pay for
the
disc part.
You know, I mean, you print the disc, you have to ship it out to stores, you have to, you know, let the stores get their own cut, you know, and pay the middleman. You know, profit on video games for stores isn't significant, but it's there.
Yeah, so make the game $40 and make the hard copy $60.
They won't do that. They don't want to devalue their games. So, I mean, at most you might see $55 games, you know, digital.
No, it would have to be at least $10. It would have to be at least $10 for people to go for it. It have to be $50
would be the sweet spot. But, you know, Microsoft, this is the same company that makes you pay $60 a year for what is essentially the same service that PSN gives you. I mean, there's differences. There's little, you know, cross-game chat, parties, things like that.
There's some pretty significant differences. I mean, the quality of the service compared to the PlayStation service. I've heard from users that use PlayStation and Xbox, and the functionality for Xbox Live, just it works a lot better. A paid service is always going to work a lot better than the free service.
I'm saying, yeah, I've read those from people saying that too. At the same time, I've also read where people say that the service is not $60 worth of difference a year. I mean, I understand, but people don't feel like they're getting anything paying for Xbox Live, you know, regardless of whether or not the service is better. As far as is technically, I mean, the I don't know anything about networking, stuff like that. I mean, I assume that there's better networking on Xbox Live than there is on PlayStation Network. I enjoy cross-game chat. I enjoy parties and stuff like that. At the same time, I don't feel like Microsoft... I don't feel like I'm getting a real value with Xbox Live Gold. And I've had arguments with people about this, but when you're charging me $60 a year, I have a PS3. I don't play it that often because Sony games, most of them don't intrigue me. I like RPGs. Like, there's a lot of JRPGs that come out on PS3 that don't come out on Xbox. That's what I play PS3 for. I don't play PS3 for multiplayer games, so I don't know anything about the networking. At the same time, when I turn my PS3 on, I don't get bombarded with, you know, 15 different ads for Adele's new album, or, you know, rocking, you know, Shaun White skateboarding with Stride Gum or whatever, you know, just crazy, pointless, you know, irrelevant ads for things that I don't care about that I have on my 360. You go through each blade on your 360 except for the Bing blade, which by itself is kind of a marketing ploy. And you have ads on just about every single blade of the Xbox Live dashboard. And they've done articles on Penny Arcade about how much money Microsoft makes off of those ads. And they're making money hand over fist on top of, you know, people paying $60 a year for that. You know, and PSN, yeah, there's a few ads. I mean, that there's a ticker on the top of the cross media bar that kind of shows ads and things, but it's unobtrusive. It's a very simplistic looking, minimalist UI. I enjoy that. You know, I go into the Xbox Live dashboard. I can't pin things to where I want them to. When I want to be able to turn my Xbox on, have the important things all pinned up on that front page, no ads, because I'm already paying them $60 a year. If you want to put ads in your marketplace, that's fine. I understand ads being in your marketplace. PSN does that. Wii does that. The entire point of a marketplace is to show you things that you might want to buy. At the same time, you know, Microsoft is forcing these ads that people may or may not find relevant on them every time they turn the system on. And if you're paying $60 a year, you know, you can pay PlayStation $60 a year and they will give you, you know, like 2 free games every month. I mean, not free, but access to 2 games a month from the PlayStation Classics collection or some sort of downloadable game. That's a value. That's something you are actually getting for your money. And then, you know, I mean, Xbox, I know that they're not going to get rid of the ads. They're making too much cash off it. I just wish that they would make me feel like I'm getting a value. Give me something. Give me like 200 Microsoft points a month or something for subscribing. I mean, all those space bucks, they're not costing Microsoft anything, you know, if they're just giving them out.
Right.
They're not taking that big of a hit, you know, giving people, you know, a small amount of Microsoft points a month to maybe go out and buy something on the marketplace. I don't know.
I see what you're going with. Interesting thing is on Gamertag Radio, they actually interviewed Major Nelson for their first show of 2013. And yeah, they actually asked him that question about paying for live and having those ads there. And he, I forget specifically what his response was, but
they like money.
Well, so they basically said that these companies are paying a buttload of money just to get gamers specific ads onto the console. And Major Nelson's like, well, we're not going to turn away that line of revenue into the service. So I think
that's what I'm saying. They basically just answered, we like money. That's what they just said. I mean, that they're not going to turn away money, because of course they're not. But at the same time, they need to understand, you know, you turn on the Wii U. I don't know. I haven't played Wii U, but from what I understand, you're not bombarded with ads when you turn that UI on.
Yeah.
And it connects to the internet for free.
There's only one small ad on each tab, and it's in the bottom right corner. So,
but I mean, it's still there. And there are, ads aren't even relevant. If they were promoting actual games, like Xbox Live Arcade games or something, I'd feel better about it. But it's stuff I don't even care about. It's Doritos ads.
Yeah, it's Doritos, Old Spice, some of those other... Yeah, I don't care for them much either. I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat where I would really like to see those ads. I would personally like to go back to the Blade system.
Reason I'm talking about this is because what Microsoft is doing now is probably a good indication of what they're going to do with the Xbox 720. And right now, Microsoft... There's three things you can say about them. Microsoft loves making money. They will not turn money away. Two, they like having control over users, which is true about just about every... I mean, Nintendo has... I mean, it's crazy about wanting to control users to the point of not even wanting users to talk to each other. I mean, they've really kind of drugged their feet about in-game chat. And it's weird because the primary theory around that is that Nintendo doesn't want kids talking to pedophiles. And, you know, I mean, I go on to Xbox Live and there's a lot of vile things that kids say and even adults say.
Yeah,
but
it's like
haven't encountered a pedophile yet.
Yeah, some of the more offensive people are the ones that are the kids.
Yeah.
It's like they're all smack talking, trying to act all big and tough. It's like,
I mean, these are the kind of kids that would probably stab a pedophile in the neck if it tried to grab them. You know? I mean, you got pwned. I mean,
yeah. It's like, take that! You just got beat by an adolescent 6-year-old. No scope. No scope. I fragged. I teabagged you.
The pedophile.
I called
like
you.
It's. I'm going to buy an Xbox 720. This is true. And the reason is because I love Halo. You know, I think about it. If it weren't for Halo, I probably wouldn't own an Xbox. There just aren't that many exclusives that I enjoy on Xbox that would make me want to buy the system for it. I'd rather have a Wii U because I like all of Nintendo's first-party exclusives. But Halo means so much to me that I am willing to buy a system almost exclusively for that. And there are going to be games on 720 that are exclusive that I'll get excited about. I'm sure of it, but...
Well, I think just the community... I really like the Xbox Live service compared to what I've heard people say between the PS3 and Xbox Live. I'm willing to cough up the $5 a month to play on Live.
Yeah, but I mean, at that point, there's a strong... I mean, you go on to NeoGAF or something, and I keep bringing NeoGAF up because that's where I go to kind of find... Well, what are gamers thinking about?
Yeah, that's kind of the premium gamer forum is NeoGAF. So yeah, that makes total sense.
What are they talking about? I mean, you go up there, and there are always debates about this on NeoGAF. I mean, whether or not Xbox Live is worth $60 a year. I mean, if you feel like you aren't getting gypped, then the $60 a year, I mean, if you're having fun with Xbox Live playing on there, then it's worth it to you, because otherwise you wouldn't be playing on Xbox Live. You either pay the piper or you don't play. I mean, that's how it goes. Microsoft makes you pay to play. So, I mean, if you're enjoying Halo multiplayer or any kind of multiplayer on Xbox and you're enjoying cross game chat and stuff, then it's worth the $60 to you. But, you know, generally Sony fanboys, I mean, not fanboys, but Sony players, people, I mean, gamers who enjoy Sony products or Nintendo products are always complaining that, yeah, you're always going to get screwed over, because as long as you say that, yeah, I'm willing to pay the $5 a month, you know, even though I'm not really getting a whole lot of value out of it, even though Microsoft is basically just charging, I mean, for no reason, you're just paying the troll to go across the bridge.
Well, let me also add in there, there were recent sales on eBay, Tiger Direct, and Amazon for discounted Live for $30 and $40. So they're, yep, every year they have these sales. Every year you can plan for buying a year's worth of Live for half the price.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're a real...
Like, I bought 3-year codes from Tiger Direct through eBay to renew my subscriptions whenever they come back around again. And I did the same thing last year, and I did the same thing before that.
Yeah, if you're gonna buy Xbox Live Gold, the best way to do it is wait for sales and then stockpile.
There's sales that come around. I mean, the big one is this one that comes around like the January, February timeframe. That's pretty much a yearly thing. And then there's ones that come around for Christmas time and all that good stuff.
What's interesting is the fact that everybody is stockpiled, and the fact that this is never going to change. Xbox Live Gold is never going to be free. There is absolutely no practical reason to make it go free on Microsoft's part.
And from an infrastructure standpoint, maintaining that kind of networking infrastructure for that kind of service, it takes money.
Yeah, but I mean, the PS3 gamers, you know, come around and they say, look at this. I mean, it works. We have the same service. It's free.
Yeah, but look at how long that it was out that one time.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know if Microsoft could get hacked in the same way. I'm not sure. I mean, the backlash that caused Sony to get hacked was they took away Linux support from the PS3. You couldn't install Linux on your PS3 anymore, and that got hackers pissed, so they hacked PSN. And it was out for months. I don't remember how long it was. It was 4 or 5 months. I think it was.
Yeah.
Four. And that is a long time. I mean, I don't know if that was a problem of Microsoft. The same thing could have happened to Microsoft if they had pissed off hackers somehow. I mean, whenever they went after, and it wasn't just the Linux thing. There was also that they tried arresting the guy who had figured out how to basically jailbreak the PS3 and put Homebrew on it.
Yep.
I don't remember that guy, but I don't remember his name.
I forget who.
He made it to Mexico or something. He was hiding out in Mexico for... I thought that was kind of funny. You know, hacker on the run, but... I mean, and there's other stories of people in similar positions that had to flee the country, you know, to find sanctuary, but that really causes huge backlash from hackers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wonder, you know, even though I'm paying $60 a year, what if Microsoft pissed off hackers somehow? And I'm not sure exactly what they'd do to cause that, but... You know, could they get hacked just as easily? I mean, you're paying $60 a year for this service, but what if it got knocked out for 4 months? I mean, would you get your money back? Would you get, you know, $20 back from that? I mean, PSN, they didn't charge. I mean, they gave people free stuff, and people weren't paying for that service. I mean, I remember when they came back up, you'd get like 5 different games you could choose from. I mean...
Do you think they're paying to keep that infrastructure up now?
It's
not as robust as the Xbox Live experience.
But it works. I mean, you can play multiplayer games on that. People play multiplayer games on the PS3. I mean, people look at the numbers for Call of Duty on PS3. if it were completely broken, those numbers would be, I mean, there's a bigger number of people playing on Xbox Live, but that's just because there's a bigger player base on Xbox Live. I mean, you play on Xbox Live because that's where your friends are. And that's where your friends have always been. You know, I don't have anybody on my PSN friends list, literally.
Yeah, I don't have many either. I don't even have you on there.
It's just,
I mean, I've played PS3 before, and I've added people on there, but
the big question is, will Xbox Live Gold improve for the Xbox 720? Will they at least make me think that I'm getting a value out of it? Will they give me something that differentiates it from the free service that the PS4 provides? That's my question.
Now, I think that's a good question, yeah.
It's a question that even if you have the answer, it won't matter, because I know that I'll buy a 720 and I'll pay for Xbox Live Gold and I will buy Halo 5
and Halo 6.
I'll get the limited edition or the ultra super collector's edition or whatever, and I'll get Halo 6 and all this stuff. So it really doesn't matter. Microsoft has me over a barrel. I mean,
yeah,
they're going to get their money either way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just want to give me something that makes me think that you still care about me, Microsoft. You know, give me something to brag about in the NeoGAF threads. whenever the Sony fanboys start, you know, complaining about Xbox Live Gold, give me something to fire back with. I'm just talking as general Xbox Live gamer here. I don't have a NeoGAF account.
Cross-platform chat would be huge.
Between what? Like PC and 360?
PC, 360, tablet and 360.
I have this weird idea of like a kind of console revolt against PCs. Like they all decide that they hate the PC. And so they all like collude to make this cross-platform chat system for PS3 Wii U or PS4 Wii U and 720. Or like a unified console gamer tag system. Like that would be nuts.
That would be kind of crazy.
But the PC's coming up, you know? I mean, the PC community is rising up.
I mean, I have never thought of PC and the console things as really being kind of going away or coming. There's been multiple articles from a slew of different people was saying the console industry is going to die out. The PC gaming industry is going to die out. Neither one of them is going to die out. They're two separate platforms, and there's a lot of console gamers and there's a lot of PC gamers. It's really kind of just the focus on what kind of games are on what platform. The consoles are very good for racing and first person shooters and some RPGs, where for the PC you have a lot more fine grain. You have games like StarCraft and Team Fortress 2 and League of Legends and World of Warcraft that work on the computer experience. So neither one of them is going to go away. It's just a matter of where your preference is.
I think in the PC gaming community, there's and I'm not saying it's...
There's this elitist kind of...
Well, not even elitist. It's like a... They want consoles to die off because they think that the consoles are holding games back. And there's good examples that they can show of how... I mean, the games on consoles aren't being as creative as games released for PC. I mean, you're not going to get an anti-chamber on, you know, 360 or PS3 day one like you would on the PC. It's a more open environment. The PC allows for more creative game types. I mean,
right,
you get
but
things
the
on PC like FTL. You're never... I mean, that's a cool game. It's a fun game. You're never going to get that on the console.
Right. But the casual market that everyone's trying to cater to, and that is where the console comes in. That's where the majority of the casual players reside, because it's one system that can play all the games they want to play. It's not a system that they have to keep constantly updating with better, newer graphics and whatever else that you need to stay up to date to run.
That's the one thing I like about the console. I kind of like the walled garden experience of the console. I mean, that's messed up, but I think that both can exist at the same time. I don't see why.
Oh, definitely.
And I mean, the games are coming out on PC despite the console being existent. Just because consoles exist didn't stop Anti-Chamber or Minecraft or any of these other games that people think of that could only exist on PC from coming out. Didn't stop them.
Well, and
it still
on
came out on the PC.
Right. And on the PC, you also have the ability to introduce mods into the game, and people have their own expressive creativity there as well. Like some of the mods that have come out for Skyrim. There's some pretty wicked things that come out for that. And the same thing for Minecraft. I mean, you have the Minecraft experience on Xbox now, but the experience on Xbox and the experience on the PC are going to be two separate experiences that are always going to be different. And that's completely fine. Those two kind of league of gaming platforms, yeah, they kind of have an effect on each other. And I guess I can see where the argument where console gaming is kind of holding back PC gaming kind of falls into effect, but each one of them is going to keep on going no matter what.
Yeah. The console gaming market is never going to die off because there's a lot of money to be made there. The PC gaming community is never going to die off because there's always going to be this creative urge to make fun games and have a place to put them. I mean,
right.
Look at Happy Wheels. People want to make these games and they will find a way to release them. And
look at Happy
Wheels.
The place
to release them is PC.
Happy Wheels and Slenderman.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, coexist.
Yep.
PC and consoles together in harmony.
And don't forget the third one, handhelds.
Oh, well, I mean, I consider those console. I mean, they're handheld console, but it's a completely different kind of console market. I enjoy the games that come out on handhelds generally better than the ones on, you know, the big consoles for the TV. I think that they have more creative gameplay that, you know, because there are limitations to, you know, the graphical presentation and certain, you know, size restrictions that you have just inherent to the handheld, that they have to come up with creative types of gameplay just to give you something to purchase it for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at something like Fire Emblem Awakening, that kind of strategy, RPG, tactical thing. I mean, stuff like that really doesn't come out on the consoles, especially not kind of like a grid-based thing. And I like that gameplay.
Yeah.
So you get stuff like The World Ends With You. Like, you couldn't do it on consoles because it needs a touchscreen at the bottom. Well, I guess you could do it on consoles, but
then
it wouldn't
Pokemon.
Be as cool. Yeah, I mean, it's a different market.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get back to Halo, shall we?
Yes. Well, I mean, it was kind of about Halo. It was about
360. Yeah, it was. I'm not saying...
The fate of the 360 and, I mean, Microsoft's fate is Halo's fate. They are intertwined.
Yes,
the Xbox would have died without Halo.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't have survived. You, if Halo hadn't have been released, there might not have been an Xbox 360.
Okay,
I think
yeah.
you could make a pretty good case that it wouldn't have become nearly as
popular. Yeah, Halo made the Xbox and therefore kind of led to the Xbox 360. Yeah. Let's see. To wrap up the bulletin, there's a couple of things about some Halo 4 campaign Easter eggs in here. So, of course, we've seen Easter eggs throughout the Halo games for a while now. We've seen all the way back to Halo 1, the very first Halo, we saw Easter eggs. So, Jessica's put a list together of some hints to a few Easter eggs, and they're pretty much going to be releasing hints to some Easter eggs throughout the next few bulletins, however long they want to go for. And these are all specifically campaign ones. But I guess they really want to show them off and have people find them, so they're putting out the hints. So if you don't want to be spoiled on any of these hints, then skip over this part of the bulletin and probably skip 5 minutes of this podcast. But the first one here is for the Mission Requiem, and they break it down into what is it and where is it. So the what is it here is an appreciation of architecture and a return to nature. And where is it? It may be beautiful, but returning here is deadly. So this is on Requiem. I'm trying to think what the returning here is deadly part. What area would that be?
Maybe a kill box? Something like you'd fly up there and die?
I don't know. But an appreciation for architecture. I mean, it could be as early on as the the crash forward into Dawn, possibly.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess. I don't know. Next one is for Mission Forerunner. What is it? A deadly ambush waits for you. If you have the will to power through, kill them all. Your reward is great. Weapons to turn the tide of fate. Where is it? After the enemies rain from the sky, before the doorway through which you fly, you must return to the rock on which the ledge is by. Patience is a virtue, but your death is nigh. So this is on Forerunner. This is on the third mission.
Interesting. Very cryptic.
Patience is a virtue, but your death is nigh. You must return to the rock on which the ledge is by. This obviously has... I think this is the part before where you can pick up the Banshee on the second shield or the... the shield emitter. That'd be my guess on where it is. Let's see. The last one is on Midnight. And that is... Or what is it? A congenial sight. Where is it? Lost in the belly of the beast. And this is on Midnight. Very last level. So if you manage to find one of those, you can go post over in the bulletin discussion thread. They have a thread for each bulletin that they put out. And just says that if you're one of the first ones to find it, she may have a prize for you.
Slap in the face. Yes, Angel will come to your house and slap you in the face. So go out there, try and find them. By the time you listen to this, there's a possibility people might have found them all, but right now it doesn't look like people have really found it.
Yeah, so from from briefly reading through the thread that's currently there, or before the show was we started recording, it looked like one person may have found one of them. It didn't seem like he was very sure. So it still seems like they're out there to be found.
And these hints are only for a few of the Easter eggs, Avela. They haven't hinted at all of the Easter eggs that they're going to hint at.
Right, they're going to release more in future bulletin updates.
So even if they find all of the ones they've already hinted at, you can still look for the ones that they haven't, find them.
Correct.
It's a lot easier with the hints, obviously.
Well, yeah.
So, but, I mean, you look back at the Halo 3 Easter egg, where people are trying to find the I Would Have Been Your Daddy skull. And that one was crazy, because you had to jump through the rings to the tone of the Halo theme, with each ring, you know, symbolizing a different keynote.
4654534.
Yes. So, but actually people cheated at that. They looked it up in a hex editor. But that always disappointed me, that people didn't find that on their lonesome. They didn't actually discover that in-game.
Well, what's the likeliness that people are going to be jumping through those hoops and go through all of those combinations?
Well, I mean, it's possible.
I guess.
If you were jumping through the rings and noticed that each ring had a different tone, you might try doing the Halo theme with that just to have fun with it. Like some idiot
might have just like... I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't do the Halo theme with this. Like, or...
Yeah, okay, you bring up a good point. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, you bring up a good point.
I'm saying they wouldn't have made it, you know, a skull Easter egg if they didn't expect somebody to find it. Because the I Would Have Been Your Daddy skull, that's an important skull to have. It, you know, it unlocks a lot of funny stuff for AI to say. People love that egg.
Yeah. No, it's good. So something that's not specifically addressed in the bulletin, but did come out yesterday, is the official community cartographer's thread. So what you can do is, they just opened this yesterday, as of this recording, so actually the same day the bulletin came out. And if you have a map that you've been working on in Forge and you want to see it be put into matchmaking, then this is your chance. We'll put this thread in the show notes as well, but you can go through all the kind of checks from the post here, make sure everything is kind of put to order, all your spawn points are done correctly, all the game type spawns and objective plates and markers are done correctly, no big exploit areas, kill boxes and safety zones are where they need to be, all that good stuff. So we'll include that thread in the show notes, but it gives the community an opportunity to really post their maps out there, and hopefully we'll see some good stuff come from the community. I have very good feelings for this.
Yeah.
So there's that, and that wraps up the bulletin. So let's move on to a couple of submissions that we got in our mailbag. So the first one comes from Shadow, and it says, "Hello, Potacular. Here's an easy question. What are your dislikes about Halo 4, and what would you like to have brought back from the previous Halo games into Halo 4? I don't have any dislikes about it, but I wish by now they could have at least put in some bots to play with. That would be awesome, and maybe would get a lot more buys from people that don't have internet to play online. Later, Potacular, and keep on fragging those trucks and mechs." Dislikes about Halo 4, I think we've voiced a lot of opinions already on some of the stuff that's kind of problematic with war games, stuff that's kind of with the campaign where we already mentioned on this show, that's how some of the stuff got brought in a little too quickly.
I hate Halo 4. It's awful. It's the worst game ever.
It just sucks, that sucks.
You know what I dislike about Halo 4? The entire game.
I guess severe dislikes? Other than the bolt shot in more games, I don't really have anything that's too pressing for me personally. From bringing back stuff, for me, would definitely be race. That would be one thing that, and I think they're going to bring that back. If they're going to try really hard to get that back in here. I would like to see, and we already talked about this earlier in this one too, the switches brought back.
Yeah, I like switches. I like turning things on and off.
I have a feeling we kind of already answered this question in previous podcasts a lot and in this one. I would like to see, and I mentioned this on our last episode with Griffball Hub, I would like to see some kind of spectator mode for kind of like tournament play.
Yeah.
Even if it was restricted to just like LAN local connection only. Like it wouldn't not necessarily have an Xbox Live functionality. Also, please let us lower weapons in online games, just in customs. I mean, have it disabled in matchmaking, fine, but give people the ability to lower their freaking weapons. Make it a toggle in the custom in the game options if you need to, but make it available. It making Machinima so much easier.
I want Sarah Palmer to say eggheads again more frequently. That's what I dislike. Like, people dislike that, and I was like, I love it. I want her to say egghead every single sentence.
I don't think she's really said it at all these few episodes because of how much backlash there was.
I mean, that's what you get. That's what you get for complaining. Yep, they listen to you. No more eggheads.
I think you're one of the sort of people that like her saying eggheads that much.
I'm like one of... Well, I don't even know anybody else who liked it. I'm like the only person who enjoyed that. Got a kick out every time she said egghead.
I mean, it was
so
right.
Cheesy. I'm not saying it was awesome. I mean, it was like in a cheesy like, that's your catchphrase kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it was all right. I didn't mind her saying it the first few times, but it just got repetitive and overused.
I liked how, like, it kind of signaled this resentment and hatred that was deep inside Sarah Palmer's heart. She, like, hated science types. She's like, eggheads! I hate them!
Like, hate to break it to you, Chickadee, but they're the ones that made your armor.
You know, blaming everything on eggheads is funny to me. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's this irrational hatred of something you don't understand is funny.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to take the last one?
Yes. RJ Diaz says, "Hey, Podtac. Lately, I've been hearing that the Podtacular community is dying and that you guys are trying to bring it back up. I would post on the forums myself, but I'm not good at all with this forum. You are announcing this customs night. I have some extra custom maps and game types I'd love to try out with others. I have the lamest friends that just play Call of Duty and Minecraft. Sad face. I don't know if these are the funniest. I don't know if these are the funnest maps to play because I don't have a hard drive, so I can't post to my file share, so there's no rating or knowledge of how my map relates to others. So I hope to try out my maps on this customs night. Halo, gamertag RJD93.
So wait, you have to have a hard drive in order to upload to a file share?
I guess.
Don't you?
I don't know why I would have said that, he couldn't post.
That doesn't quite make sense. So wait, how are you playing war games then? I mean, I guess you could have a thumb drive or something, but even that doesn't make sense. I'll ask Jess about that, because that does not make sense at all that you can't upload to a file share if you don't have a hard drive. Or I'll post it in the Waypoint forums or something. But yeah, so we're definitely looking at doing a customs night. I dubbed it Wacky Wednesdays, the last bulletin update we did. Projected that we would probably start doing that is late this month or the first week of March. There's some things I'm working on with kind of trying to get the community back up and running. I've been working on videos. I've been working on, and actually haven't announced this officially yet, but I'll get to that in a second. I've been working on the Facebook page and kind of getting that back and up and running too. So I've been kind of juggling a few things between getting the community up and running and still maintaining the kind of podcasting repertoire that we've been putting out. Like, you guys have probably noticed that we've been putting out 2 or 3 episodes every week for the past couple of weeks. And it's just going to be like that probably through March. Sorry to overwhelm everybody, but I think from the feedback that we've gotten, you guys don't mind it too much. And we just have a lot of content to talk about, and we're really excited for what Halo 4 has brought to the table and are just kind of open to talk about so much. So there's stuff going on there. One thing I personally have been working on is a guide to Spartan Ops. So I posted on Twitter and Facebook, and I even posted in the HBO forums, a document that I've been working on for the past 2 months that pretty much summarizes the first 5 episodes of Spartan Ops Season 1. And with that done, it's about, I believe it's 32 pages with 4 pages that are just kind of a table of contents and then the title page. So it's 28 pages of written walls of text. And it's a complete analysis of the storyline and walkthroughs for the whole, for each chapter. I would encourage you guys to go and check it out. I will have a post up on Podtacular here shortly after this podcast is released where you can go find it. And I actually got an idea from the folks over at Griphaw when I had them on our previous show about posting this as a, just kind of a blog kind of thing. So I'll probably start posting these as blog entries on the homepage of Podtacular, just kind of one chapter every day or so, just doing it throughout the weeks up till the release of when I actually release this full final document. So I will post that up, and if you guys want to provide feedback, definitely let me know. I put a lot of time and effort into this, and I hope that you guys really enjoy reading it. It's long, so you don't have to read the full thing. The final version of it is going to be coming out in the March timeframe, and it's going to be a nice PDF with pictures and some other assets in it. So I think it's going to be something that a lot of people are going to hopefully enjoy.
So now that you've written that up, do you have a new appreciation for the Spartan Ops writing team? Like, development team in general?
It's kind of a love-hate right now, because with how well and how much they've changed the Spartan Ops experience for the next 5 episodes, there's just so much story in the cinematics, and there's so much now behind the actual gameplay stuff, where that 30 pages is going to easily become 80 pages long of content.
Yes.
So while I have a deep appreciation for how much they're writing for Spartan Ops, now I'm like, well, screw you guys for making me do even more work than I was anticipating on doing.
Oh, man. So I thought this was going to be like... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I sent it over to Jess a couple of days ago, and I haven't gotten a response back yet. But I asked her to kind of spread that around and see what people thought. So we'll see what happens. But I think if you... I know it's a little late because we're already kind of halfway into the second half of the season, but by the time I got to it, it was already mid-December, and like, I really want to do this, so I just kind of sat down and did it. And this week I'm going to start writing up my summaries for Episode 6 and Episode 7.
What do you think a good price would be to charge for the next season of Spartan Ops? If they're going to charge. And I think they will.
I would pay $20. At least.
Yeah. That seems like the sweet spot. 1,600 Microsoft points.
Yeah, I would think that's the sweet spot is $20. I personally, with how much I'm liking it now, I would go 30, but I think for a lot of casual players, $20 is going to be the sweet spot for a season of Spartan Ops.
Well, you'll also be paying for map packs too. You got to remember that.
So, would this be included? Would the map packs be included in this price? Because then at that point, because I'm thinking just strictly Spartan Ops by itself. Spartan Ops by itself, a second season I would pay $20 for.
I think the way Spartan Ops is released, it wouldn't. Because, I mean, by the time Spartan Ops ends, they would have released how many map packs?
Two.
Like, two? So.
We're supposed to have another map pack come out in May. And I don't think a second season of Spartan Ops is going to be turned around that quickly.
I would buy a bundle package of like one season of Spartan Ops and then like three more map packs. Yeah. Well, not even three. I mean, that'd probably be too much because.
Maybe two.
I mean, I wish they had given me three map packs in a bundle, but.
But what if they do something like a Halo 2 remake and they introduce like nine classic Halo 2 maps into the mix.
Yeah, and tie the new Spartan Ops season to that. That'd be great.
That'd be like interesting.
You get a season of Spartan Ops. You get Halo 2 anniversary.
Because I could see containment being used in Spartan Ops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Spartan Ops on your favorite Halo 2 maps.
Yeah.
Like Spartan Ops on Terminal or something. That'd be funny. Trying to think of what else would be good for Spartan Ops.
I don't want to say Waterworks.
It'd have to be the bigger maps.
Yeah.
So.
We'll save that for another.
Yeah, we'll think about show. It. But I mean, they're not going to do that anyway. I mean, it's this is just a fantasy.
We'd be
speculating on something that is complete fantasy to begin with.
Yeah, well, I mean, the possibility of a Halo 2 remake, I mean, there's rumors everywhere, so it's not completely outside the realm of possibility.
But I'm saying I don't think they'll put Spartan Ops missions in Halo 2 maps.
No, I highly doubt it, yeah.
I totally expect Halo 2 Anniversary to be released. There's just too much money to be made there.
Yeah.
There's no reason to not do it. I mean, all the development has been done. You have the story, you have all of the set pieces, you have all of the geometry and stuff. I mean, there's work to be done in remastering all of that for HD.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, as far as all that other stuff goes, there's no development in it. It's just money to be made.
Yeah. Well, there's a little bit of development to be made in it.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's obviously going to be development, but I'm saying there's not nearly as much. I mean, they are not going to spend the same time developing Halo 2 Anniversary as they did developing Halo 2 initially. Because that had to go through concept. You know, they had to figure out exactly how they wanted all of, you know, these pieces of architecture placed, you know, which missions they wanted you to do, what they were going to cut. All of that stuff's out there. All they got to do is remaster it.
Right.
I'm not saying it's going to be an easy task, but there's a lot of money to be made.
Right.
You can even outsource it. You don't have to have 343 remake it. I mean, that's what they did with Halo Anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. All right.
Get certain affinity on it. They're bored.
All right. Well, that wraps up this show, guys. Thank you for tuning in. As always, you can check us out at our website, podtacular.com. And if you have any questions or comments or feedback about any of the stuff that we talked about, or want to kind of submit any tale that you have or custom games that you've been working on, maps that you've been forging, or any Halo news that you want to share with the rest of the community, be sure to drop us a line at submissions@podtacular.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and a couple other places. We're kind of spread out everywhere throughout the various communities. And I'm trying to branch out as part of the kind of the community revival effort as well. We have our voicemail back up. Still haven't received a phone call from anybody. Still waiting. If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can leave it at 240-200-HALO. That's 240-200-4256. It does have the standard four rings still there, but it will flip over to voicemail and you can leave your message there. Please try to keep it under 2 minutes with a target of about 90 seconds. That's kind of the ideal message for us to play on the show. So when we do get one, we will play it on our regular bulletin update show. Yay.
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 Yay. Are we ever going to do Tales from the Foxhole again? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, if people send them in, of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, do that. Like, if you're playing Halo and something cool happened, you send it in. Like, submit it. We need stuff to talk about on the show. I mean, Podtacular is a user submission show, as it has always been.
Yes, we want to talk about your funny stories.
Yes, cool stuff, funny stuff.
We had a lot of fun experiences back in the day where someone would just send stuff in, and we would rant on it for 20, 30 minutes just on one funny tale. So if something happens to you, please let us know. Please send it in. And if it's too difficult for you guys, if we need to make it easier, let us know. Tell us that we need to make a submission box easier to use to submit your funny tale or something.
Like, call me up, tell me that you need to talk to me in, like, an Xbox Live lobby, and then I will, like, come to your lobby and write down your tale.
I don't know if we'll do that.
No, I mean, I'm not sure. I wouldn't do that. I'm just gonna say right now that I won't do that, just to discourage you from doing that. But do send stuff in. You know, write to us.
Yes, please. Please do.
Write things to us. We love getting letters.
I mean, there was a time where we were getting, like, 13, 15 submissions a show.
Yeah, that's back when we, like, started to hate letters. We were getting so many.
Yeah, we had to cut some out.
We're getting, like, two a show, and we're like, please, we're lonely. Send us anything.
So, yeah, please, if you have anything, please send it to us. Yeah. And we will be
as long as it's Halo-related.
Well, yeah.
It can't just be anything, obviously.
Anything with a filter. And that filter being Halo 4. So please, please do that. We would appreciate it very much if you kind of share your experiences with us. And with that said, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you guys next time. Keep on fragging them trucks.
Keep on fragging war games.
Keep on fragging the bolt shot.
Keep on fragging Easter eggs.